Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like Polly Walnuts, best unheard. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend and Mark Scheifele's cut man, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, Vaughn?
Well, Mike, at the moment I'm doing a little spring cleaning, and I decided to start with the liquor cabinet.
That's a new spin on that one.
I'm drinking scotch at the moment.
I love scotch. I love scotch. Scotch is got scotch. Here it goes down, down into my belly.
The Jets play of late has caused me to switch to, you know, to hard booze. Like it's a
natural progression.
No, but seriously, Mike, everything is electric. Everything is electric. What a song, eh?
Oh, so good.
Mike's brother, Dave, my longtime friend, Mike's brother, in fact. Since birth, Mike?
Yeah, I'm just checking the math. Yep.
Okay. Sent us a YouTube link to a new song by Liam Gallagher called Everything is Electric, and it's just fantastic. And
really good. Really good
and,
song.
Check and it I've really taken to it. In fact, I looked at the lyrics today, and it's amazing how the lyrics tie into how the Jets fans could be feeling this year. I mean, it's these are actual lyrics from the song.
Well done.
The city is burning, sinking ships in the ocean. With a head full of dreams at night, sorrow is written the story of life. And a little later in the song, I don't hate you, but I despise that feeling. There's nothing left for me here. You know, you won't know if you don't go. So I'm just like, but
Liam Gallagher still got it.
Still got it. I don't know how such a morbid song can make you feel so good, but I've been buzzing all day. I love that song.
And Carly Rae Jepsen's okay with this betrayal?
For some reason, she hasn't returned my call.
Oh. Shocker.
Yeah, but before we go any further, I just want to give a shout out to my little buddy, my youngest son, AJ, who had some ear surgery today.
Very cool. Yep.
He is my brave little warrior, and he's resting and recovering tonight at home here in bed, and he's a big Jets fan, and he's just so tough, and this is his second surgery on his ear, and everything looks really good, and it was really positive today, but a shout out to AJ. He doesn't listen to podcasts, but, you know, I thought I'd give him a shout out anyway.
No, I'll memorialize it, and that's awesome, and I hope he's feeling better, and he is a tough little dude.
Thanks, man.
For sure. Okay, so we've got four games to cover. Check-in time.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs.
I don't know how you want to start it off. I'll give a quick recap. We went 2-2 over the last four. Some wild games in there. We lost to both the Avalanche and the Stars, and were victorious against the Coyotes and the Habs. The Avalanche and Habs games were spectacularly, I don't even know what the word is, both ways, good and bad. But I guess, what were your thoughts? Quite a ride.
It was quite a ride. I think the Dallas game went to OT, so I think we were technically 2-1-1.
2-1-1, sorry.
But that game did sting. I don't know why. I looked at the stats after, and the Jets seemed to be badly outplayed in terms of the statistics. I think, and much has been made of this, but there's Jets, you know, set some history twice in these four games.
Yes, like, they did. I knew we'd get into that.
Yeah, the Colorado game was the first game in Jets 2.0 history where they were up by 3 goals and lost. And then the Montreal game was the first game in NHL history where a team was up by 4, lost the lead,
and then scored another four.
Yeah. So, boy, I mean, there was just a lot going on in these three games, a lot more than what the score suggests. But some good spurts, some bad. It was, you know, once again, representative sample.
Yeah.
You know,
the nadir, I think, being the Avalanche game. That was, you had cleverly, we were going back and forth on Twitter, and you sent out a message directly to me saying, well, whatever happens after this first period against Colorado, we'll always have that first period.
They
proceeded to self-combust and did the same in the Habs game, and it almost wasn't funny anymore because the exact same scenario replicated itself. The personal worst part was my boss, my direct boss, actually lives in Denver.
Oh no.
And you know, we're still in the get to know each other phase. She's new to the company, and I had to really politic it good.
Oh yeah.
Because I was internally losing my mind, but I had to act calm and cool, and she was throwing some barbs, and what I really wanted to say wasn't going to be good for my career. No. So I navigated that, I think, okay, but it was the whole experience was undesirable.
Well, it was that's a great way to describe the game. I mean, to go up like that, and the Jets did play well. It wasn't like three fluky goals in the first period.
No.
Right? I thought the Jets played very well, and you can say that they were fortunate to come out 3-0, but I do think that they carried the play for the better part in that first period, and they had, for the most part, earned their 3-0 lead. You know, could it be so? You know, but in that second and third period when the Avalanche got going, you know, the Jets sort of had this collective look on their face, or their body language was such that, like, whoa, this is not in my contract. This is not in my job description.
No,
and I don't know what these guys are doing, but I'm not doing it.
It was a Harlem Globetrotters, Washington Generals scenario, right? We were clearly overmatched and had no counterpunch to us. It's no secret the Avalanche are a very, very good team. But we managed to subside that in the first period. And then it's a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Like, it was a completely different team, and we just got boat raced.
We sure did. And, you know, it was tough because you think, could this be the beginning of another downward spiral? Well, thankfully, the next two games were against bottom feeders, Arizona and Montreal. The Jets didn't make those games any easier on themselves than, they did not. You know, kudos to Eric Comrie for the big win against against Arizona.
Yeah, he let in a couple soft ones. But
he did. Shaky start, but kept the Jets in the game after that. You know, the Jets did outplay the Coyotes, but they did get into some trouble where when the Coyotes were aggressive on the forecheck. And you know, the Jets didn't like that. So the Jets tend not to like teams that try really hard. And, you know, this just in. Yeah, it's not our bag. Like, this just in, you're in the NHL. This may happen from time to time. And then the Montreal game was all over the map. You know, on the good side, I thought Nate Schmidt played his best game of the season.
Yeah, he was good. I had that written down.
And it was one of the few games this year where both the Scheifele line and the PLD line seem to be clicking on the same night. They seem to take turns. I don't know if it's jealousy or deference. You know, it's kind of tonight's your night. We're shutting it down over here. So that game, you know, suggests what the Jets are capable of offensively, you know, as well as really highlighted their weakness when Montreal wanted to, you know, what they would say in soccer, high press, forecheck hard, just be hard on pucks. They did not like it at all.
No, and we redeemed ourselves, obviously, in the third. And some of that, and I apologize, I don't have the number directly in front of me, but, you know, our shooting percentage was obviously off the charts. Of course,
26.7% shooting percentage. Yeah.
You're going to win some games that way.
Yeah.
And we capitalized, and we did have a lot of scoring chances. You know, the expected goals metrics for the game actually favored Montreal overall and not by a small amount. It's just we were really opportunistic, which is fine. It's just the whole game you're in a glass case of emotion.
I'm in a glass case of emotion!
And it's something where, just real quick back to the Coyotes game, did we win 5-3? Absolutely. Did the Coyotes feature players like Riley Nash and Andrew Ladd, who was a healthy scratch for the Arizona Coyotes, which is a hard tumbly fall for our former stalwart captain? And it was funny. I had to listen to the game. I listened to the Coyotes broadcast because I streamed it. And it's a recommendation I would make to anybody who's listening. Try that once in a while, because you get a real, for one thing, you get a break from Kevin Sawyer, but you get a real good window into sort of outside of the Jets bubble perspective of who is valued around the league. And obviously they're very high on Kyle Connor. And, but it was interesting to hear them kind of slag Blake Wheeler and some of our defense. things that we think are sort of unique to us in our analysis, obviously it's permeated to even the outskirts of the dredges of the NHL in the Coyotes. But it really was a fun viewing experience because, you know, the Coyotes have given up, and you could tell the broadcasters have given up. So they talked about for about 40 minutes about the Jets. So it was super entertaining.
Oh, cool. It was like a baseball broadcast where this kind of just have this light conversation going.
It was a patter. It was just a patter all along. It was really fun.
Oh, cool. Well, I mean, just hearing a different context would be good. I know that I was reading when we were playing the Oilers in the playoffs last year. I guess some Edmonton fans were getting the Winnipeg feed, and they were saying how good it was and how balanced it was. I'm being serious. Now, I've heard that about the Edmonton broadcasts before, how Homer, not only the broadcast, but also the local media is. So I think whatever we have, they have it worse in Edmonton. But that's the general rule, I think. It's just science. It's just science. Well, Mike, I wrote down five things that I learned this week, and I want to share them with you.
Okay.
You got a minute?
Give me.
Okay.
I do. I've saved some time.
Okay, so what did we learn this week? The Jets provide as much defensive coverage as the new public health orders. Okay.
Don't you work for the government?
Not that part of government.
Okay.
Yeah, I do, but, you know, we're just having fun here. Okay, a Jets lead is about as safe as the immunocompromised at a Freedom Rally.
We're getting more risque. I'm a little scared for number five, but hit me.
Pulled it back on this one.
Okay.
Mark Scheifele is not good at fighting.
Concur. I 100% concur. That's a good one.
Building on your opening, Paul Stastny is really putting the nuts in Pauly Walnuts.
That was low-hanging fruit, but I like it.
And in Letterman-esque fashion, my number one is Evgeny Svechnikov just might be the answer as the third guy to play with Connor and PLD.
Okay, well, we'll get into that.
You know, this is like the anticlimactic last one there.
We'll get into that because I have some opposing thoughts. Well, I thought we've got some other segments to get to. We're bringing back the old Mac to Whack continuum. So I'm gonna point you the guru. I'll let you go first. So on the Mac to Whack continuum, where would you put the last four games? Tough one, I know.
Well, we're loosely using a 1 to 10. You know, yep. 1 being Whack and 10 being Mac, and I landed 6.5. You know, as a former school bully, I really liked it when you beat up on the weakest guys in the class, and that's what the Jets did this week. They beat Arizona, they beat Montreal, and I just like, it's just like, yeah, more of that. Like, just hit them, kick them when they're down. It made me feel really good. It took me back to my junior high days and good times, mid-80s, good times.
I'm gonna go 5. The Avalanche loss was traumatic.
Yeah.
It was a stark realization that whatever even slightly faded hopes that I had that we can compete at the highest levels, they're all gone. That
but
team
only
is just
in the
much
manner
better.
In, yeah, but only in the manner in which it unfolded. Like if every period would have been 2-1 Colorado, we would have been kind of just like, yeah.
Yeah, excellent point.
You know what I mean? But, you know, it is, you know, a cruel twist to go up 3-0 and then lose and then give up 6 straight goals and lose 6-3. I mean, that's special. That's hard to do in the professional setting. But the Jets managed to pull it off. It was almost impressive.
Almost as depressing as the Dallas Stars crowd on that one night that we played them. There was about a smattering of about 6 people.
Oh, they were singing and laughing at us, and oh, it was, yeah.
All right. We'll go to the pre-boarding announcements.
All right.
All right. So, first class.
All right. First class assignment, as always, brought to you by First Mining Gold, providing first class gold mining development advice and services since 2015. Mike, why don't you go first?
Sure. Now, I had two names written down because I thought our choices might be duplicative, but I'm going.
No way. No way.
No? Okay. No, well, that's no good. I'm going PLD.
Oh, good for you.
I think he has established himself as sort of the true alpha of the forward core, and there's a certain grit and determination to his game. Sometimes it's not always pretty, but it's effective. And I thought he was really good in our two wins. And I think he gives a shit, which I don't think we can say that for all Jets players. And I wanted to recognize it because Laine's on a bit of a heater. And it hurts me to my core because every Columbus Blue Jackets game, I see some spectacular highlight of him toe-dragging two defensemen or blasting one from the corner on a power play. And I miss that dearly. And it helps to realize that, you know, not every deal is win-win or win-lose. I don't know what to categorize that deal yet. I think it's still a little early to tell. But we did get a good player in PLD, and he is very, very young. And so I'm very optimistic. And it more than anything, it puts a Band-Aid on the hurt because Liney's special, and I miss him.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. I won't take this too much on, or I won't take it on a tangent because I could talk about Laine and this deal for a long time. So I do think I support your choice. I think it's really good. And I'd like to say, as much as I miss Laine, I am impressed and will cheer for PLD, but it's a tough one. All right. So for my first class assignment, you'll never guess. Okay. So on this one, I definitely did my own research, my own due diligence, for sure. I was influenced by no one. I'm not just going to steal a listener's idea just because they suggested it to me. I pandered to no one during the First Mining Gold First Class Assignment segment.
So Dan's pick, what do you got?
No, it's not Dan. Oh. It's not Dan.
Okay.
I totally did not steal your idea, longtime listener Corey Waldbauer. And Eric Comrie is going up into first class.
Oh.
He only had one win, but it was an important win. He faced a little adversity in that game. Sketchy start, but played well to the back end of the game. His play over the course of the season has also been very solid.
Yep.
Now, this is a guy I never had a lot of faith in.
No.
At any point in time.
Yep.
I thought that it was I think we talked about it being
we did.
Probably one, if not the greatest concern we had with this lineup going into the season.
We sure did.
And he has not been the problem in any stretch of the imagination. So, Eric Comrie, grab your stuffy, come up to first class. You're getting the adult meal. You can order off the adult menu tonight.
He does look like he's six.
He does. He's a very nice chap.
That's a great call out. My only caveat would be I've seen a lot of, you know, his record is obviously percentage based is better than Hellebuck's. The level of competition that he's faced is, you know, we're selectively putting for him in there. I think the organization as a whole doesn't fully trust him, so he gets put in prime situations to succeed. But at the end of the day, he's gotten the job done way more than not. And I respect that. And same as you, I had a lot of questions about that decision to put him as the backup. And he's been nothing but a pleasant surprise. So that's a good one.
Good. All right, let's move to the penalty box. Charlie's Coffin Confectionery, their check cashed. So they're, once again, our sponsor for the penalty box. Again, Charlie's Coffin Confectionery. You kill them, we fill them. Come check out our selection. It's deadly.
Oh, did you modified that, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, you tweaked it.
I'll have another one next week.
I like it.
Yeah. So I'll go first. I'll go first this time.
Okay.
So who am I putting in the penalty box? Oh, I'm going to create some controversy here.
I know what you're doing.
Go. Who do you think?
Is it Stastny?
No. That would have been a good one. I'm going to put Connor Hellebuck in the penalty box. Now, hang on. Remember, this is a narrative-setting podcast. What we say matters. And this was done out of love. This is a call to arms.
I like it.
I'm trying to poke the bear. I'm trying to poke the bear and propel his play to a new and better level. Kind of what you did, Mike, with Mark Scheifele, right?
That's true. I lit a fire.
Right? You lit a fire, and he responded. We need Connor Hellebuck to respond. And I am trying to create a goaltending controversy here in Winnipeg, you know.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. So Connor Hellebuck, you know, again, it's not a suspension. It's not a five-minute major. It's a two-minute penalty. We need you to be better, man. We need you to be better. You're not been the problem. You have not been the problem. But we're talking about the last 7 days, roughly. Come on, Connor. We need you to be a little bit better than you've been. Connor Hellebuck, go to the penalty box. Who do you got, Mike?
So, firstly, he did have a bad game, the last game. So I don't mind that. And if it in whatever roundabout way, it spurs better play. Well done. I did have Stastny as a sort of question mark, but I'm gonna stay clear of that. I'm going real low hanging fruit, and this is less an indictment on him and more on the coaching staff and probably the organization. Adam Brooks.
Okay.
Like, I understand.
Picking on the little guy. I love it. Picking on the little guy.
That's what I do, Vaughn.
It's the theme of the night.
That's what I do. I don't understand what's going on here. And it's something where he looks way out of place. Shouldn't be on an NHL team.
No.
And I'm just confused as to why we tend to favor anybody who has NHL experience that we pick off the garbage heap, rather than the whole bevy of young talent that we have wasting away down on the Moose. And so I'll keep it short. It's just frustrating to me. Yeah. After the first game, it became readily apparent that this guy wasn't very good. Again, great story. Glad he's from the province, but he's in the penalty box. And I'm putting him a 5-game suspension so we can get him out of here.
Okay.
No comments. All
right. As a former bully, I can see, you know, bully tactics when, you know, they're
show
themselves.
In front of you.
Yeah. And here it is. You're looking at that tiny little guy who can barely skate and you're trying to push him over. You're that guy at the, you know, at the open ice rink.
If it fits. Okay. So we're going to harken back to the segment we did last week, and we're calling it now In-Flight Entertainment, 5 questions about the Jets, and we'll go somewhat rapid fire. We've got 5 sort of 30,000 foot questions about the Jets. And did you want to start us off?
Sure. I'll ask you and then I'll respond, and then we'll just trade back and forth. So first question, Mike, is Blake Wheeler too aggressive with the media?
I love this question. I don't know if aggressive is the word I would use. I think it is unpolished. I think there were several, when we were really in the doldrums there were several games where he just opted not to speak with the media. I know media availability is sometimes, it fluctuates in terms of who gets asked to be out there, but he seems reluctant to do so and is very happy to let PLD or Lowry or Schmidt or anybody take, after really tough losses, to do that. And he has in the past. He's lashed out. He you know, wears his emotions on his sleeve, so to speak. But in my opinion, that comes with the C, that comes with the paycheck, and you might get frustrated with the media. And sometimes I'm not a professional hockey player. I have no idea what that's like. But my expectation is that you have the wherewithal and sort of mental agility to be able to fake it. Or, again, I'm not asking for platitudes, but if someone's just doing their job in the media, it's a bad look. It's a bad look for the captain, and it's a bad look for the team when pushed a little bit, that your first response is like, what do you like in the dressing room then, if you're not getting your way? Like, it comes off as petulant, and I'm not a big fan of that. And I'm, you know, aggressive or not, I'm not a fan sometimes of his off-the-ice demeanor.
I agree with everything you said. I'm trying to look at this in a different way. And I don't defend it because I don't like it. I think it's obtuse. I absolutely do. I think the strategy is, or if there is a strategy, it's like, you know, I'm going to create this, barrier around the team that nothing, no bad thoughts can get in. I'm going to stick up for my guys.
Right.
You know, that type of strategy, you know, rally the troops, you know, bunker mentality. So I do think that, I think he attempts to be strategic in his engagement with the media, but I don't think the application of whatever strategy he's trying to employ is well done or even effective. Well, I shouldn't say that. All that matters is what's going on in that room. So probably for him. So if he comes in that room after this type of engagement with the media and all the guys in the room go, great job, Cap.
Yeah, way to
great,
go. Way to
great
protect
job.
Us.
Way to protect us. We needed that, man. I'm sick and tired of that guy. Listen, I'm saying if they're all wrong and on the same page and he does something like that and it helps in the room, that sucks for us. But we don't see that side of it. That's all I'm
Fair.
Saying.
That's a good point.
I'm not defending it. I think there is I think it is clunky. It is just clunky. There, especially with a guy like Blake Wheeler, who's intelligent, spent a lot of time in college, you know, is a smart guy, progressive thinker, for all we've been led to believe, the anti-Stasny, some might say. But, you know, I just don't think this is being done well. But if it's effective behind the scenes, which is something we'll never see and never know, well, then it's hard to argue with it. But I don't know. It's hard for me to justify how he engages the media. It really is. But there may be more going on than what we see. All right, take us to number two, Mike.
If you had to trade one of the following on trade deadline, would you select Dylan or Schmidt?
Well, I think this is a question of mind and heart. My mind's telling me no. Right? So my mind or my heart would say Dylan. He's got 2 years left at $3.9 million. He has been largely, you know, he's been meh this year, yeah, at best. You know, he has this intermittent physical presence, but he hasn't really brought a physical presence to the blue line. He hasn't been bad, but he certainly hasn't been good.
No, his defensive records are bad.
3.9 isn't overwhelming, but it's still a chunk. You know, I'm not sure that we couldn't save $3 million of that $3.9 million by having, you know, Dylan Sandberg and Billy Hainala tag off on games, right?
Fair.
Sandberg is a big kid too. Nate Schmidt, you know, that's the heartstrings, right? Like, he's got 3 years left at $5.9 million. Like, I very much like Nate Schmidt, the person. He plays the type of hockey that I want to see the Winnipeg Jets play. Mm-hmm. I think he's been better than Dylan, but he hasn't met expectations. He certainly hasn't played to the level of $5.9 million per year. It's a heftier contract, and we would free up more money by getting rid of him. I also think he's more versatile. So I would do Dylan, but oh boy, I'm still struggling with that 5.9 number. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I'm going to give a very, I'm going to give a legal answer. It depends. I would do it, you know, obviously my first priority was like, what can we get the most for or the best value for? So that's, you know, that's step one. Step two would be to, in my opinion, to evaluate as a whole what we want to do with our D collectively, with, yeah, like you mentioned, with Hainala, with Sandberg. Where can we fill in some efficiencies and cut salary? And so to that note, I would cut Schmidt. I would trade, see what we can get, because I'm exactly like you. I really like his game. I like the prospect of his game in terms of, you know, he does every two or three games or so, he'll do a two-line pass that's really quite breathtaking. He can be very slick with the puck, but unlike Morrissey, and I can't believe I'm saying this, he isn't very fleet of foot. He's not as fast as I thought he was, and yeah, he's not as evasive as I thought he was, and he does get caught on pinches. He gets caught in tight areas in our D zone, and not what I anticipated. And for that much money, I think we can clear up some cap space. And I think maybe I'm being way too optimistic, but if you want that level of offense, I think Canola can offer that.
Yeah.
And I think we have that. And so that would be my choice. Again, I, like you, it's very close.
Yeah. I went with my heart. I definitely went with my heart. My head is nodding at your answer, but I went with my heart. I don't know.
No, fair enough.
All right, so I'm up. I'll just randomly pick one here. When Cole Perfetti returns to the lineup, do you automatically put him back with PLD and Connor, or do you move him to another line? So if so, which one? So I'm asking, do you keep Svechnikov with PLD and Connor, or do you move Perfetti? What do you do, Mike? Perfetti's back in the lineup. What do you do?
Well, we'll have to take into consideration, I think Ehlers is going to be back
for tomorrow night,
which is exciting, and we'll be at that game.
Oh, you got tickets?
Yeah, it's me, you, and Rich.
Oh, boy. I will be downtown at 2:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, my God.
No, I got to pick up the kids from school, Mike. I'll be there at 4:30.
I was just going to say 3:15 then.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Please go ahead.
So my answer is going to be conditionally yes. I understand that with Sveshnikov back with PLD and Connor. Obviously, they've been much improved. But I think some of that analysis suffers a bit. I wrote an article about biases, and I think this suffers from a bit of anchoring bias because everybody else we put on that line, it was such a detriment to our, you know, our two skill guys that, you know, it's a market improvement with Sveshnikov on there. The numbers, the underlying numbers, the difference between Perfetti and Sveshnikov are not significant. And obviously, Perfetti had some growing pains, and he's not as seasoned, so to speak, as Sveshnikov. And overall, I think if we were making a playoff run, I would put Perfetti on the third line or find another spot for him, hopefully that's productive. But I think the season's over. So why relegate him to a third or fourth role, giving him 7 minutes a game as a checking forward, when that's not at all what his skill set is? And for whatever reason, we touched on this last podcast, we don't even like Sveshnikov anyway. So what are we holding on to? I mean, I don't think he's going to be here next year.
Meaning the Jets. You and I like
him. We like him, yeah. We like him a lot. Yeah. But they don't seem to. And so why are we pretending otherwise? Again, I know there's some line juggling to do with Ehlers. We both talked about this. Let's put Wheeler on the third line, and that frees up space for everybody. Done. If you want to put Sveshnikov on the third line, I'm fine with that too. But long story short is that I would put him back with PLD and Connor.
I would not. I really like that triumvirate of PLD, Connor, and Sveshnikov. And I do think that I think most, if not all, of this coaching staff will be gone after this year. I still think we have, I just don't think just because we're not making the playoffs, like I paid a lot of money. Like I pay a lot of money. These guys got to play all 82 games hard. Like
I don't disagree with you.
That mentality. I'm not saying you piss me off, Mike. I'm just saying that mentality pisses me off. Like win games. I want them to win game 82 and game 81 and game 80, you know? So I would keep those three together. I think Sveshnikov is a good compliment. I don't think it's for sure that he won't be back next year. He would come in very cheap. I also think that if you have Andrew Kopp on the third line, who brings a reasonable amount of offensive punch, Lowry kind of doesn't, but Kopp does. And then, well, you know, he does have the ability to create. Well, that's too strong. I know what you're saying. He doesn't do a lot of creating 5-on-5, but I think if you have Kopp, Lowry and Perfetti, that's not a waste of his time. Those guys get a fair chunk. I think you can't go fourth line Perfetti. I think you can go third line Perfetti. Maybe a couple times a game you can put him with PLD and Connor. I don't think that, we would love the world in which, you know, he might go first line with Ehlers and Scheifele, or second line, whatever we want to call that.
Right.
I don't think that's going to happen.
No, me neither.
But I do think that there's enough ice time. If he would be in the top nine, I would have him on the third line. I don't necessarily think the third line necessarily needs to be a checking line. Just put good hockey players together and ask them to play.
Well, we've been saying
hockey.
That for years now, but sometimes we don't always follow that model. But I totally agree. My bias, and you know this, I love Perfetti, and so I want him to be in every position to succeed, grow, and develop. And sometimes the Jets organization, we're not very good at that. No. And I think you're sending another message where, okay, well, you know, thanks for your service, but we're gonna put you on the third line, and you know, because they do treat the third line as a checking line.
A little bit, yeah.
So again, okay. Well, number four, my joke question is that should we always play 4-on-5 and Lowry can score 86 goals a year?
Ooh, but, tempting.
But that obviously not realistic. This was just for you, Vaughn. Mark Scheifele.
Okay.
So there's lots of trade talk. There was a weird amount of disdain and ire for him after his fight in the Habs game, and out of context, he finished the fight and he was mimicking what Logan Stanley did, right? The rally of the crowd. It was the one time that I've ever seen Mark Scheifele be funny, and everyone shit on him. And I was like, come on, we want this guy with a personality. I thought it was great, but again, there's lots of non-local media that really, really disliked it. So there seems to be a real groundswell of dissatisfaction with Shifley. So, Ron, is he just misunderstood, or is there any truth to any, some of these disparaging comments, myself included?
Well, my name's Vaughn, not Ron. So
I didn't say Ron, did I?
Yeah, good to meet you.
Hey, Kramer.
Hey, George. Lily.
No, Susan.
No, it's Lily.
I think I know my own name.
yeah. Well, I mean, I am interested to hear your view. I mean, to me, I think we saw it the same way. He's literally mocking himself. He's literally saying, "Wow, yeah. Was that ever a crap fight?"
I just got
And he was playing on the Logan Stanley thing. It was a giant in joke to the entire building. Like, I've seen that guy play 500 times.
Yeah,
right. Like, he's not a fighter. He's just like, no Jets. You know, he is a lightning rod at the moment. There's a lot of frustration out there. And whenever you do something that gives, you know, the great unwashed, you know, room to attack you, they're going to attack you. And this was just, you know, those who believe in the code, you know, are up in arms, right? I do think that the frustration with Shifley is real. You know, I did see a stat today from Jay Fresh that he's had the largest negative individual impact on defensive zone coverage in the NHL, like in the last 2 years or something.
Ooh,
like that.
We're setting records all over the place.
Yeah, four of the top 10 were either Jets or former Jets. There was Line A, Wheeler, Connor, and Shifley.
Good for us.
Yeah, but the article did go on. It wasn't an article, it was a tweet. It did go on to say, listen, there are elite players in this list. It doesn't mean they don't do other things. It just means that when we isolate their individual contribution in the defensive zone, it's quite negative. But it's, you know, I think, you know, it was something like it cost the Jets one game over the last 2 years or something like that. Which is not negligible, but it's not the massive problem that people may think it is. But he is the worst in the league at it. So I just think we need to get him. He started to become rejuvenated. We need to get him back with top level players. I give a lot of credit to Stastny, the hockey player. He does a lot to carry that line.
Yeah,
and keep them out of trouble. I think that you need Shifley needs a supporting cast, and oh boy, does Wheeler ever need a supporting cast. And there's too much weight to carry. I think that we need different people with Shifley, and I think he can be really, really effective. And Ehlers is back. I guess he's on the third line tonight, which I get. Like, it's his first game back in like 45 days or something like that since January. So you're not going to necessarily put him on the first line his first game back. I don't even think, like, that one doesn't bother me. I'll lose it in game two or game three if he's still there. But the point being, is 55 misunderstood? I think absolutely, both in the micro and macro. I think he means more to this team than people understand. And I think he was completely misunderstood in this particular instance. Your take.
Yes, so specific to, I wouldn't even call that a fight, a Donnybrook. Mm-hmm. It's completely taken out of context, and I'm probably guilty of this as well, where you analyze something without a full context. But I thought it was actually somewhat endearing, so I'll turn the page on that one. The Jay Fresh numbers that you listed there, thank you. I hadn't seen that, and it to me matches my eye test. Mm-hmm. I am very guilty of really focusing in on Mark in the defensive zone because I'm preoccupied with it now. And there is a lot of floating. He, you know, he's excellent in tight battles with pucks, but he is selectively engaged in that activity. And so it's just, obviously, I've talked about it before, it's frustrating. I still don't think that we should trade him. I don't think we would get proper value. I think his, you know, his, what he's getting paid is below market, I think, for the offensive talent he is. And to what end? To what end are we trading him? And I think you said this to me, Vaughn. Those never really work out. When you trade a guy in at a low point, or where the team's at a low point, and you do it just to do something, and I think it's ill-advised. I think if you're reevaluating at the end of the season, and then as an organization you look at our core and go, well, we need to make some changes, and we do it thoughtfully and rationally, yes, absolutely. I'm here for that, but not this sort of knee-jerk trade deadline reaction. I have no time for that.
Well, I'm going to jump in really quickly. Number one, I just sent you that thing from Jay Fresh. Okay, number two, three things super quick. There was a similar stat for defenders who have made the best individual impact in their defensive zone. And Dylan DeMello was in the top 10 in the entire league in terms of how effective he is defensively. And the third point, I forget, but let's move on.
No, and I guess the last thing would be that I do agree that Stastny has really helped on that line. So I think the Jets should probably give him a bonus, maybe of $1,000.
I know where he could get it, his $1,000 back.
Okay, I'm sorry. I wasn't going to do that. Okay, number five.
Okay, so I think the last one that we had on our list was, if you were the Jets owner, would you hold on to Kevin Cheveldayoff after this season?
Okay, I created a bit of a ad hoc pros cons list, and you know, you let me know if you disagree with some of the pros or some of the cons. But in my opinion, I think we've drafted well. I think that at the top end, it's not easy. As much as pundits and armchair analysts like you and I like to think that it is, it's not. There's lots of misses, even at the highest ends of the draft. So I think as a whole, I think we've done a pretty good job. I think free agency, like any free agent market, we're hit and miss. We struggle with getting sort of bottom six guys or fourth line forwards, but I think most do, because that's why they're fourth line forwards and third line D. And I think overall, I can't be hypocritical. At the beginning of this year, I had pinned them Stanley Cup champions, and so that, at least to a certain extent, as a product of what I would think with Chevy's team that he's put together. So those are the pros. The cons, obviously, these are a little more ethereal. You know, the Kyle Beach situation, that's all just unfortunate. We've covered that. Paul Maurice, his tenure and then subsequent exit on his own accord, that's not a good look. And at the end of the day, where we sit right now in the season, we're not very good. Yeah. And so, again, that's a reflection of the GM. I lean towards I know what's going to happen. He's not going anywhere. And I'm in totality, I'm skeptical, but I would keep him on. Put him on a short leash, but keep him on.
I think the relationship status between the Jets and Kevin Cheveldayoff would be, it's complicated. You know, I do think that this is really one of those iceberg issues. There's what is above the water and what's below the water. There's what we can see, and what we can see, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think you summed it up very well. But we don't know how these things are manifesting behind the scenes. Number one, we really don't know the impact and the view of Cheveldayoff's of him within the organization based on the Kyle Beach incidents or situation or whatever you want to call it. It's a tragedy. We can call it that for sure.
Yes.
You know, we don't know if he's to the extent or if he has lost the moral right to govern based on
the high
these
ground,
things.
Yeah.
He's lost the high ground. Now, the drafting, I agree with you. Now, we don't know how much how actively engaged he is in selecting and sifting through these things. Now, if he's just the guy, if the scouting crew says, all right, we're at 10th, if this guy's available, we take him. And like, if they're the ones that are saying, Chevy, Perfetti just fell to us at 10, you have to draft this guy. Okay. And he says his name. If all he's doing is agreeing with his scouting staff and then saying the name and not really actively participating in the identification process, well, then anyone can do that.
Well,
right?
The only thing I'll say to that, sorry, real quick, is that part of being a boss or a manager is surrounding yourself with smart people. So whether you did it intentionally or not, that is still a bonus, right, or a plus. In that, if you recognize that maybe you're not the best at scouting, but you have gone out and found people who are, Again, it's not the same as being savvy yourself, but it is still, to me, it's still a pro. But I totally get your point. It makes a bunch of sense.
No, and yes, you're right. Like, he does get credit. Even if that is the case, even if he doesn't select these guys and all he is doing is reading the name that is being recommended to him,
right,
you get to take credit for that. That's the way the world works. It may not be fair, but you know it, Mike. That's the way the world works. So my point is that I do think that there's what we see on the outside may not be what's going on the inside, and it's kind of like the Blake Wheeler thing. You know, we don't really know what's going on the inside. I think that there is a very reasonable argument to be made that he's done his job to a very adequate level, and that the investigation into the Kyle Beach thing was nebulous enough that he could sort of have that, you know, slide off his back and wear a little bit of Teflon on that one so that he will be around next year. I mean, we had this team going to the Stanley Cup prior to the season. We really did. We loved the offseason moves. We loved the drafting. We were excited. I think he's back as well.
Yeah, and I want to point out one thing. So I understand that, you know, my position is a bit hypocritical and somewhat nearsighted or farsighted, however you want to look at it, because I, like many other Jet fans, when the Kyle Beach scandal was occurring, I was outraged and I was upset and was not, I was one of many who were saying, well, I think this might be it for Chevy. And so I just, you know, I want it on the record that I recognize a bit of the hypocrisy here, because I've not changed my tune, but as time passes, it doesn't change at all the significance of the event. And Vaughn, to your point, I think that within the dressing room or within the NHL or within the organization, if he's lost that moral high ground, then he should go. I think he has, but I'm also trying to operate as realistically as possible because the NHL is terrible and they have a culture problem. I'm thinking more with my head just in terms of his performance as a GM. And I've weighted the Beach scandal, and maybe that's wrong, and people can absolutely disagree, and I would agree with them for disagreeing.
I think the one thing we could reasonably point to suggest that he hasn't lost a lot internally is that Paul Maurice decided to resign. If Kevin Cheveldayoff was teetering on the edge of and was becoming irrelevant internally, I don't think Maurice leaves. I think he sticks around and maybe looks to get punted upstairs. I don't think there's galaxy brain stuff happening here where Paul Maurice resigns, they fire Chevy, and they bring Paul Maurice back in as the general manager. I don't think that galaxy brain stuff is happening. I think Maurice was done. I think Cheveldayoff sort of regrounded himself or re-anchored himself within the organization after the Kyle Beach thing, and we're going to see him again. There's enough decent things to point to in terms of hockey operations that and further things haven't come out on that, so I don't know what to think. I am disappointed. I hope he's changed. I hope there's a culture change within the Winnipeg Jets organization, or at least within the office of the general manager, on those important issues. So let's not end it on that bum note. Let's talk about
bummer. Huh? This is a bummer, man.
Bummer.
Let's talk about you and me and Rich, our good buddy Rich, doing an IPA eye test Friday night together in person in a packed Canada Life Center, Winnipeg Jets. I don't even know who we're playing tomorrow, Dallas or someone. I don't know. It doesn't matter. You know, I'm going downtown at 2:15.
I'll make sure when I show up at 5, I'll bring a bucket to clean up the puddle.
Where are we going to meet at Tavern or Hargrave Market? Where do you want to go?
Wherever you like, man. You guys can select the bit. You're going to be there first, so you stake the like a land claim. Just stake a land claim. We'll come find you.
Awesome. So we're excited about this. We haven't been to a game together in a while.
It's been disjointed, so yeah, this is exciting.
Okay, so fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge, the official Face-Off Hockey Network podcast for the Winnipeg Jets. Check us out on Twitter at Airport Lounge 55, on the interweb at thefhn.net. with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, and Overcast Podcasts. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge, because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets, go. See you, my buddy.